This episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which I was lucky enough to head out to Barcelona and see being unveiled at its launch, and to chat to athletes like Sharon Nakidi, who won the New York Marathon a few years ago, who does all of her easy and steady runs in this pair of shoes. And then we've set Jess from the Running Channel a very specific challenge to train for 12 weeks for her fastest, hopefully ever, 10K, which is also back out in Barcelona.
Yeah, she is loving training in this shoe. And I think it's important as well, because we're so lucky we get to test lots of different shoes, but we do know that some people just want that one pair that will do everything. So Jess has been doing her long runs, interval sessions, and she will be tackling the final 10K in the Under Armour Infinite Elite shoes.
Yeah, big focus on endurance and a brand new foam, which provides extra energy return and looks after you on even your longest runs. So if you want to know more, head to the link in the show notes.
This is the Running Channel podcast with me, Sarah Hartley, Andy Badley, who's probably going to talk about marathon training
again.
And Rick Kelsey in the corner pressing buttons, looking very happy with himself this week.
He's very pleased with himself because it's only taken us, what, how many months of the podcast with you incessantly pushing buttons for you to realise what one of them does? I think you've been experimenting with turning me into something.
Andy, say, I'm a lanky monster.
I'm a lanky monster.
He's so pleased with himself.
Rick's the only one that can hear that, but I have heard what it sounds like.
Yeah, he's got the headphones on. I've got no idea.
So whatever Rick's done to me, everyone will find out in the edit.
Brilliant. He's laughing to himself.
Did you just turn it on again?
Stop messing with me. I don't think anyone can take it seriously if we're going to be talking about legal performance enhancements
today
on the podcast. I can see him pressing buttons. Yeah. He's such a child.
Hey, but that's what we're going to talk about today. You finally found a way to make Andy interesting.
I can make him.
After all these years.
I can make him a monster, a robot. A megaphone, a duckling. Don't know what that sounds like. Any road. Let's do a podcast.
Yeah, let's get stuck in.
So before we dive into legal performance enhancers,
maybe illegal performance enhancers as well, briefly.
Oh yeah.
Oh really?
Just a little tease there. Oh. And actually in today's episode, I've got a little admission to make, not about performance enhancement.
Oh my gosh, it's all picking up. Rick, how's your week been?
I think the three of us have got so much to talk about. I've been so excited about actually seeing you two for a change.
Because
I know you did 16 miles. I know you've been to Northumberland to Hadrian's Wall.
Yeah.
And I... Yeah. Got a post-surgery
PB.
Yes, hello, I saw this.
Now, I don't mean to boast.
You don't mean to boast, but you're going to dismiss both of our running news out of hand and go straight to yours.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I took two minutes off my time on Saturday.
You took 2 minutes off?
The same park run as normal?
Yeah,
two minutes off my time. This is 5K, Saturday morning, 9 a.m.
Yeah, 24:45.
Oh, that's amazing.
I was kind of blown away a little bit. Like, I felt like it was a breakthrough moment.
Do you think it's come from, because you built up to doing the 10K and then you've come back to doing 5K. Do you think that kind of extra fitness is
I think the 10K and also absolutely nailing my training plan in the week.
Yeah.
Like not doing too much running, just the strength, that really, you know, narrowing down on the strength and conditioning and the cross training with a bit of cycling.
Yeah, because you're only actually able to run twice a week.
Twice a week, yes. Yeah, yeah. So Saturday and then one at a time, probably. Yeah, yeah, so I couldn't believe it.
Look how happy
I was actually
he is.
Using my watch as well and following 5 minute per kilometers. So
nice.
Every kilometre I was out, if I stay under 5, then that was my aim. I'll try and go under 25. And then, you know, somehow I did it. So
that's fairly miraculous in itself that you could use the watch to the extent.
Because normally it just sounds like a siren going off and I've got no idea what the watch is doing. But anyway, mind blowing, very happy. And it gave me an idea for a video, Sarah.
Ooh.
Because of what you were talking about in the podcast last week, resetting your aims after you do something big, you know, what are you going to do next?
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of think, well, is it possible that you can just run faster than you've ever ran before? And is that a realistic aim?
As in, so you want to now, instead of it being a post-surgery PB, you want to just go for PBs?
I don't know if that's possible, but is it possible for all of us in our own, you know, maybe not you, but is it possible for us all to run faster than we've ever ran before?
So remind me again, what was your pre-surgery
23:19.
And you're around 24:40 something now.
Yeah.
It's not that far away, is it, you know?
So is it possible?
But and also, like, can we do it safely?
Most
importantly for you, yeah.
But so how was Hadrian's Wall?
Oh, my goodness. What a day. Like, I won't give away any spoilers because the video isn't out yet, but it was incredible. For anyone who wasn't following us on social media when we were doing it, me and four other women took on the entire length of Hadrian's Wall, which is just under 140 kilometres. We did it as a relay team.
Basically the whole width of the UK.
Yeah, the whole width of the
English,
UK.
Scottish border.
Also, so one thing about Hadrian's Wall that I didn't realise until we got the border. Up there.
I've just realised that I've made a massive mistake there. It's not the border, is it? But it obviously historically,
I'll turn you into a monster again.
It's not. So one, it's not the border. So you kind of start. I mean, a beautiful start location. There isn't really much of the wall left.
Oh, really?
I mean, I didn't run that. Maybe on the legs that I wasn't running.
You guys have run on it.
No, we didn't trample it down.
Okay.
No, but as in, I was expecting, you know, this is going to be the easiest bit of navigation ever because you just look for this wall and run along it.
Yeah. Mm.
But there are, you know, there are some sections where you can see it and there are quite a lot of sections where you can't see it. So definitely for the first few relay bits that we did, everyone came in and everyone was like, did you see it? And everyone was like, no.
No, you missed the wall.
No. So it's actually quite exciting when you did actually finally see the wall.
And you were also there for a major national news story.
Yeah, the tree. So we started quite early on Thursday morning and then we saw the news break that Sycamore Gap has this really famous tree in it, which is part a section of the wall.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, amazing scene in that movie, yeah.
And apparently Winnie the Pooh, or I might have that
wrong.
Yeah, but I'm not sure.
Is that the tree that inspired some of the drawings, is that
yeah right? I think so. Wow. But I might have that wrong. And yeah, someone had cut it down overnight, and there was just police everywhere.
Really?
Yeah,
because when I saw you there I was thinking, have you turned into a news reporter?
Yeah. It was very topical. I couldn't believe the timing. We've just been planning that for months, right?
I know. Yeah. And also, like, that is one of the iconic, like, obviously we plan out the shoots, we plan what shots we want to get before we make these videos. Mm. And that was like, great, we've got to get the tree. Yeah. And then we were like, well,
it's unbelievable timing.
Not anymore.
Yeah. It looked great though.
Very sad.
It did look great.
Yeah, it was good.
Back and in one piece.
Yes.
Yeah.
My legs are just about forgiven me for what I've put them through. Yeah, right in time for Chicago Marathon.
Oh, yeah.
But speaking of marathons, did a very long... That was quite a good segue, wasn't
it?
Yes, it was.
Oh, Alex, you've been learning from Rick.
Thank you. Andy, you did a very long run this weekend.
I did. I did my longest run of this training block. Probably my longest run in, I don't know, 10 plus years. 16 miles. Just over 26K.
Very nice. How was it? Have your legs forgiven you yet?
It was hard. My legs don't... I don't feel brilliant, don't get me wrong. But actually, it was good. I was so proud of myself for getting... I did it completely on my own, which I appreciate loads of people run on their own. But I'm not great when I'm alone with my own thoughts. And I set off and I'd planned way more than usual. I'd planned the gels I was going to take. So I had 3 gels on the run and was fine. And managed to get them down whilst running. So that was good practice.
Yeah.
Taken my credit card with me because I was going to stop. I didn't want to carry any water, but I was going to stop at a supermarket on the way around.
Did you take a phone?
In and out. No, I didn't take a phone, actually. I was just running, navigating with my watch.
Nice. I like it.
And so, yeah, I dived in the supermarket, grabbed my water about, I don't know what that would have been, 20K-ish. Maybe a bit earlier than that, actually. And then I was less good at drinking on the run, it turns out. less good at that.
How much of it did you get down yourself?
God, at that point I was quite hot, so it didn't really I'll say it was
deliberate
splashing spillage on myself. But yes, I was really pleased. I was supposed to do a progressive where I got faster every 4 miles, which I more or less managed as an average, but I'd misplanned my route, and the final last 4 miles, 7K or so, was really hilly and was off road. But here comes my admission, the terrifying admission. Because I've been trying to run quite specific paces in my long runs, and they're broken up into chunks, mentally that helps me get through them. But I want to look back on the paces that I ran, so I've been pausing my watch. If I have to, I got lost in a field at one point, I was just stood there looking for the way to go because I was standing still in the field. I was like, quick, pause the watch, I'm ruining my pace.
What, so you stopped? So it wasn't actually 16 miles?
It was. I stopped for 10 or 15 seconds to find
for lunch.
Andy, all credibility.
Come on.
Just
and when I nipped when I nipped into the supermarket as well.
Into the supermarket?
To get the water.
Andy, I tell you what, during your marathon, you're not going to be nipping into supermarkets and staring at fields. Hey,
come on, stop it. Stop it.
I do actually.
No, he was worried, Sarah, you know.
Was he?
He was actually really worried about this. You said last week to me.
Yeah.
In private, said, don't bring this up on the podcast. Thanks, mate.
Yeah.
I was so
genuinely worried
about
this run. Like, it was, it felt like sort of the longest one up till now had been 13, 14 miles, and that 14 miles, I think. And that was like a stretch, but it felt within my wheelhouse. But now, all of a sudden, this was approaching 2 hours. So it was an hour 50, hour 50 something, hour 55.
With a break.
Well, with the there breaks no in, it breaks. Was actually about break. 3.5 hours.
Brilliant. So yeah, and I've got some, had some amazing messages of support from people, people and on Strava in particular, like dropping, like people almost waiting for this long run to come and going, he's doing it, which is really nice. That's been making my, so if that is you out there, leaving those little comments on Strava, thanks very much.
Make sure to check the elapsed time and drop that's that in the comments.
Again, I did check the elapsed time and it was about an extra like 4 minutes, I think.
Yeah. Wow, 4 minutes, including a supermarket stop.
Yeah. Yeah. What? And getting lost in a field. Yeah.
Wow.
Do you do the automated really checkout or did you talk to a person?
I knew I was going in and out, bottle of water, bang, contactless.
Nice.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Thanks.
Was it really early in the day?
No, I started running at about 9. I'd had a long flight back on the Saturday night, so I was really tired. So that's why, I'm
feeling, you're doing well, Andy. You're doing well.
It is really nice at the moment. We touched on this last week, but I think the conditions at the moment for running are really nice.
Mm. Yeah, warm in the day. It was about 15 degrees when I was running.
Cool in,
was
nice, in the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really
yeah.
nice.
But I'm going to need all the help I can for this marathon. So in an attempt to do a Rick Kelsey-esque segue, you could get help from Legal Performance
Enhancers. Yeah. So should we start off by explaining what we mean by this for anyone that might be confused?
Yeah, and with a disclaimer, which is we're not medical experts, and some of the stuff that could enhance really your performance, both illegally and legally, you probably should be careful with in case you have any kind of pre-existing health conditions and so on. So we're just talking about the stuff that is out there that you could use, but please be sensible and don't just go out and try it. Like if you're worried, then look up some more expert advice than we can give you. Illegal performance enhancers would be all the stuff that you would test positive for, like the EPO, steroids, growth hormone, all the stuff that like over the years you've heard kind of doping conspiracies and scandals and stuff. So that's the illegal performance enhancers, I guess.
One thing that I always find interesting as well is that when I first heard about doping, I was like, right, okay, well, it's going to be really obvious if you've done that. But actually, if you go through I don't know what it's called. There's basically a list of stuff that you're not allowed to take.
Yeah.
And some of that stuff is like, you have to be really careful if you are an elite of like, if you get put on certain medications or if you have health conditions, like there are going to be some things that you might think, oh, that's fine. Like beta blockers, for example.
Beta blockers?
On the banned list, yeah.
They'd be on the banned list more for something like shooting and archery because they would lower your heart rate. And therefore, you know, like if you ever watched a movie and you know, they're like snipers and stuff, they take a big deep breath and they try and still their breathing because they want to make themselves as accurate as possible. So like no shake or movement. Oh, so I don't think beta blockers would help runners, for example. But yeah, the stuff that's obviously illegal, like that you'd have to go and buy on like the black market somewhere.
Mm.
And most of the drugs that are illegal are legal for other stuff. So like EPO is developed.
What is EPO?
Erythropoietin. It stimulates red blood cell production in your body. So I was going to say it was developed for cancer treatment, blood cancer treatment. I could have that wrong, but it's definitely developed for a legitimate medical purpose and then it gets abused. And that's what happens with most.
Same with like steroids, I'm guessing as well.
Yeah.
Like,
so they're all legit drugs that have a place in medicine, but then athletes have abused them over the past. And then there's the gray area of stuff, which like Sarah, you're touching on there, where someone might inadvertently take something.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this really only applies to elites. Like if you're not ever going to get drugs tested, then you don't need to worry about, you might have contaminated supplements, which a lot of athletes talk about. But things even like Sudafed, which is a pretty common over-the-counter cold congestion medication. There are two versions of that. Boring, one's called phenyl, has the active ingredient phenylephrine, and the other one is pseudoephedrine. And ephedrine is a big stimulant, essentially adrenaline. And so pseudoephedrine is a synthetic version of that. And that, you can buy it over-the-counter, but that is definitely a performance enhancer, and that is banned in competition.
So you can't take Sudafed? So you couldn't take Sudafed?
When I was competing, no.
Right.
But that'd be a grey area now, though, right? If you're not going to get drugs tested, if you're just a normal person running
a normal runner. But what kind of boost is that going to give you?
I don't know measurably, but if it's on the banned list, then it'd be substantial. And some stuff's on the banned list because actually it doesn't give you a benefit, but it could mask something else. So like things called diuretics, which make you pee more, they could be a masking agent so that it might flush out some of the stuff that you could test positive for.
It's a
minefield. But
right.
And when you say banned in competition, does that mean like throughout when you're training in the season as well, when you get, if you're someone who might get drugs tested, you have to give a time each day, right? Where someone could turn up at your house and take
a sample. Yeah, that's called out of competition testing. Yeah. So
does that mean then that you could take that cold and flu stuff?
Yes.
Outside of competition, but on the day if you won a race and then had that, not good.
Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah. So you'd be fine taking Sudafed to just like get through the week. But I would never have risked that because I've no idea just how long case. Stuff takes, stays in, stays in your body.
You
and
must
so
love Sudafed now.
Yeah, just go nuts on it. No, this is why we need that medical disclaimer. Don't do what we're talking about. So yeah, let's dive into the legal stuff. So this is the stuff that anyone could do that even if you were being tested as an elite athlete.
Mm.
And they do test in amateur events now, certainly age group races and so on that aren't professional races, they test at them. So the big one and the most obvious one that probably loads of people know about is caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had, to my knowledge, in the last 20 years, they've toyed with trying to ban caffeine.
How are you going to do that?
Well, exactly. I don't think it just is completely unenforceable because it's in everything. It's in and it's, but it is, it's very good science and research into how much you could take or should take based on your mass on your body size.
Is that because you don't drink tea or coffee, do you?
No, I don't drink tea or coffee.
Which
more
is why we don't have tea and coffee in the office.
Brilliant.
There is no tea and coffee in the Running Channel office. Honestly, we have to go and buy it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it sucks to be you. you're making me sound like a tyrant. But caffeine is like a well-documented performance enhancer. And to my knowledge, it stimulates the body by blocking adenosine, which is like a sedative. So if the levels of adenosine rise in your body, then that has a kind of sedative effect. And caffeine, I think, blocks those receptors.
I see.
And so stimulates your kind of central nervous system in that way. Some of the studies have seen a sort of 7 to 9% endurance improvement when it's combined with carbohydrate. I had a heart condition, still have a heart condition. So I never really experimented with caffeine when I was competing because of the risks associated with that. But there is quite a lot of literature out there about how much you could try. A lot of gels and drinks and supplements have caffeine in them. But timing is quite important here. And also there's an argument that if you are a regular tea and coffee drinker, which I'm not, and clearly no one else in the Running Channel offices because they can't get access to it, then you can, as to whether you should potentially detox from caffeine, say in the week leading up to a race, and then build back up again for the race itself to give a maximal effect. Okay. From it.
See, really, what Andy's doing is he's just helping us detox.
It's all about performance enhancement
in the week
and build up.
So
the
then you can go out and do that 5K
the weekend, smash it out.
Yeah.
So would it be beneficial to have a can of Coke half an hour before a 5K on a Saturday morning?
I wouldn't have a can of Coke personally because of the carbonation. So the fizziness is going to mess with your. It's likely to mess with your stomach. It's also, there's a lot of sugar in Coke, which you might be a good thing, might not be, but you're going to get all sorts of kind of glucose spikes and things like that from that. So, you know, if you were not messing about, but looking to improve your performance with caffeine, things like caffeine tablets.
You can get caffeine chews as well.
Caffeine chews or coffee that you make yourself so you know exactly what's going into it. Because there was stuff in the news in the last 12 months about the massive difference in actual caffeine content of high street coffees. So, and your caffeine metabolism will be different. Sarah breaks down into tears every time she has any caffeine.
Yeah,
so.
I can't touch it. I would love to know what my running would be like on caffeine, but I just don't think it would go well.
Do you not, don't drink tea?
Don't drink, I could drink one cup of tea and be fine, but I would feel the same effects of probably what someone experiences with like a caffeinated drink, like fizzy drink from a cup of tea.
So yeah, I think that the summary is, if you're going to start trying it, try it a little bit at a time, because it can mess with your stomach as well, and do it in a controllable way so that you could repeat it. So if you're like, oh, that felt good. I ran really well. And that was like half a caffeine tablet. That's a controllable dose.
And there's definitely no like right answer, like blanket right answer as well. Like I've spoken to elite marathoners who have no caffeine before they start a marathon and then introduce it halfway through. Whereas I've seen some people who, some elites who have already had like a caffeine gel and a coffee before they start a marathon. So it really does depend on you and
on
your own
body.
And
how you
like
take
so
it.
Many things in running, you just need to build up to it and then work out what fits.
Yeah.
Another one that people might not have heard of from a performance enhancement perspective is called beta alanine. Either of you heard of that?
No.
So I actually did try this during my career, but then it didn't really work for me or I didn't like it. So I stopped. I actually did it in a year. The worst year of my career, I ended up binning my season halfway through. I tried all of this stuff, altitude tents, beta alanine supplements, like different training methods, and actually it just messed with me, like both psychologically and physically. So then, and that was because I was chasing people who I think were probably doing illegal performance enhancement.
Yeah.
And I just was trying to see what I could do to kind of claw back that difference. But basically this buffers lactate. So you take it, lactate is often a limiting factor in the shorter distance races, middle distance races. So you have that feeling where your legs get really heavy. You just can't clear out the lactate, which is a byproduct of exercise as you get fatigued.
And that's legal. So you can take this and it clears it out.
Yeah, yes, you can. And it has a similar effect to something like sodium bicarbonate. I guess we're all familiar with that. You can use it for all sorts of stuff.
It stains out my kitchen table. Yeah,
exactly. But like a lot of the shorter distance runners would take sodium bicarb because that should buffer lactate and stop the feeling of it. And they have side effects like, I know Rick loves talking about it, but you can poo yourself if you take the too much sodium bicarb. And then beta-alanine kind of makes your whole body or skin tingle. A really strange sensation.
I mean, I'm surprised this is legal.
Yeah, this is an odd one to be legal. Is it then you take it regularly and it moot and it's like the same as, because your lactate threshold is what you want to like move up, right? So that you can
it wouldn't make you fitter. And this is why I didn't like it, because it doesn't, it's almost like, like if you took, say, paracetamol or ibuprofen to mask pain, the pain is still there, or the problem is still there. In my experience with these, you're doing it to like blunt the feeling of the lactate, but the lactate is still there, so you're still fatiguing. And I actually found that when I was running at a high level, I prided myself on my kick at the end of the race, like of knowing when I could go all out and how long for. And actually for the brief period when I was trying to buffer this lactate with these supplements, I lost that feeling. So I had no idea where my red line was, because I couldn't. It was very subtle, but I couldn't. Then I'd go to sprint at the end and realize I'd already used up that kind of energy source. So I'm whizzing through these because I know Rick's going to make signals at me soon to kind of wrap up. but yeah, the next one would be beetroot juice. I think we've talked about it on the podcast before.
Oh yeah.
Really? What does that do?
So that's supposed to improve endurance performance, and the mechanism I think is slightly debated, but essentially the nitrates and nitrites from beetroot juice, and you can buy beetroot shots, so you don't have to drink liters and liters of this stuff.
Or just before a race, just taking it. I think straight before.
The idea is you would build up to it in the days before the race or in the hours before the race to improve your body's like nitrate levels.
What does it taste like?
I mean, it tastes like very strong, earthy beetroot, like you'd expect. But it leads to reduced blood pressure, increased blood flow, and improved oxygen uptake, which are all good things for endurance.
I might give this one a go.
Really?
Yeah, I would say that this one is the...
I'd try this one. I might try this week.
Relatively low risk here.
Yeah. Should we get it for you for the podcast next week?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's try it. Next week, we're going to try some beetroot shots, because I think actually that'd be a cool taste test as well, because it is a very acquired taste. And we've talked about drugs testing, and it makes your urine go pink.
Really?
Yeah. So I've been drug tested before.
That doesn't sound legal either.
I've been with athletes who've talked about it, and also had my experience of trying beetroot juice and then being drugs tested, and they have to watch you pee into the sample pot. And so they're watching this like pink pee come out, which is a little bit
problematic.
A little bit worrying.
It's probably better than eating asparagus.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Lovely. Ooh, lovely.
Imagine if you did both.
Yeah. Let's try it.
So that's beetroot juice. Creatine. More of a sprint one, this, but that's like a
creatine,
white
powder. Creatine, yeah, it's muscle building, isn't it? Creatine.
Yeah,
it,
because I think my understanding is creatine is your like very, very short bursts energy source. So before you even started using glycogen or got onto fat or anything like that, those first kind of 10, 15 seconds of exercise, if you went really explosive, you would use creatine, I think, or creatine would at least help you create the energy that you need. So I'm not sure how useful that is for endurance, but it might help you if you are using gym work to get stronger or sprints to get faster
intervals,
as part of your endurance training. This is a weird one. 10 second sugar mouth rinse.
What?
So if you had a sugary solution, drink made up of really, really high, like quite a high sugar content, but just swirled it around your mouth and spat it out again, so you didn't actually swallow it. Apparently, and I haven't read enough into this to give you all of the details, there's increased neural drive in response to sugar, basically pleasure that you experience from having that sugary taste, even without actually consuming any of the sugar.
Oh, this sounds like Halloween stuff.
Would lead to improved performance.
Really?
Yeah. Well, so again, taking a fizzy drink and just swilling it around your mouth and then spitting it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine they did it with something more scientific than that, but I don't know for sure. So that's worth a go. Rick's
always
signing at me.
How do they come up with all of this stuff?
Well, someone just tries it, I suppose. Swirls it around the mouth and runs faster.
Yeah, because there's so much chat about how much carbs you do and don't need to take. Yeah. The idea of actually not having to consume it and therefore not messing with your stomach is probably quite
appealing.
It's like
those, I wonder if you get the same effect from, you know, there are those water bottles these days where it's just water, but it has like a scent in the top.
Yeah.
Would that have the same effect, or because it hasn't gone on your taste buds?
Interesting, yeah. Yeah, because you're smelling it and then it tastes like strawberry or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to list the last few, and we don't need to go into them in details, the ones that I've got written down. Yeah. Are Super Shoes. I think we've covered that at length on the podcast.
They've now tipped over to illegal as well, though.
Some of them are too tall.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for anyone, normal people who aren't going to get their shoes measured by World Athletics, I think you're pretty safe to wear what you want.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Wave Light, again, most of us aren't ever going to have this experience, but I used to have someone come into a race and pace me to run as fast as I possibly could for 1500 meters. Mm-hmm. But now they have these lights on the inside of the track and you can follow them perfectly.
I think as well, it's quite nice for the audience watching.
Yeah, so they know whether they're in front of or behind, like world record pace.
Yeah, yeah. I think it makes it more exciting.
Oh, I think it's a bit of a cheat.
I mean, one of the biggest challenges I had is often you had a pacemaker, which is down to human error and judgment.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to run nice, you know, for me, 55, 56 seconds per 400.
Oh, yeah,
for 1500
nice.
Meters. And they'd go 51 or something the first lap. That's quite a big difference.
I would get so angry.
And then two more, which I think you should email into us at podcast@therunningchannel.com if you'd like to know more about these, because I do think they're interesting. One is CBD, which I don't think is a direct performance enhancer, but can make you more relaxed, less anxious, and it's kind of more about overall wellness. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is ketones, which is a substance developed by the US military, and it's been used in things like 1 hour cycling world records. It's a different energy source in your body. So if you did deplete all of your carbohydrate in your body, your glycogen stores, and started to burn fat, essentially that the ketones are involved at that point to create energy. And so you can never have a high level of glucose and ketones naturally occurring in your body at the same time. But if you had a ketone drink and you're already well glycogen fueled, then you could, and in theory that could make you better at endurance sport. So that is a whirlwind whiz through.
I mean,
there's a lot there. I think we could probably do more on this.
Yeah, I feel like we need a part two. I feel like it's also worth saying at this point is that all of these things that we've just listed, maybe aside from Super Shoes, but it still comes into it, these are the little 1% that people at the very top of their game will be incorporating into training in order to get them that bit faster or that bit closer to the next person or a world record. If you are someone that enjoys going out training for a 5K, you do not need to do all of these things.
No.
It might be a cool way if you are going for a goal to start thinking about some of this stuff, but I certainly don't do half of the stuff on this.
No. I don't think you need to do any of this. No. I just think it's interesting to know what's out there when people are pushing the boundaries of it. And often in 5 or 10 years, these things filter down into sports nutrition or running shoe technology or wherever it might be.
Especially as we're coming into an Olympic year, it's useful knowing all of the little things that these athletes are potentially doing day in, day out to try and get that bit better.
There was one thing, obvious thing, that wasn't on the list.
Oh, yeah.
What's that?
A glass of Gavi on a Friday night.
There's been some stuff in the past. There's a famous Portuguese athlete, Pinto, I think his name was. Marathon runner, I'm sure, or definitely a long distance runner. And he used to swear by having, you know, a glass of red wine every day with his
There was as well.
Let's get him on the podcast.
Guy that's trying to live like forever or the longest did have like a shot of red wine every morning.
Every morning?
Yeah. Oh. He then cut it out because the like calorie ratio.
We talked about that on the podcast. Yeah. But
hey, there might be something in it.
Yes. And we should probably stop there and say that you're listening to the Running Channel podcast. Up next, we have got a little bit of news and also the best bit, your questions.
Don't forget, this episode is sponsored by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite shoes. Now, at the Running Channel, we bang on all the time about how if you want to run fast, you need to run slow. I'm talking about the 80-20 rule.
Yes, you need to do the vast majority of your training at an easier or steadier pace. And you need an everyday pair of running shoes that you trust to do that. And the Infinite Elite has brand new cushioning technology in the form of Under Armour's Hover Plus. So that's designed to support you for the whole of even your longest runs with extra cushioning and energy return. So that's what this is all about.
Yeah, and if you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes. So it's almost question time, but first we've each got a new story. Andy, what have you got?
Well, I got a new story and you guys have got a guess. So I got sent a list of the best places to run in the UK.
We've done
this before, right? This is a different study.
Top three, top five?
So I'm going to give you best city for new runners.
Yeah.
The best city for experienced runners. So this is where like all of the routes are marked as expert, or a lot of them are. And then the city with the most easy running routes.
Easy.
I think let's go for those three. This is from Runners Need, a running retailer in the UK, who've done a survey based on lots of different data to classify the cities as good or well, the best ones for running.
Okay, can I go first, Rick? Right, new runner, Manchester. Expert runner, Edinburgh. Best for, what was the third one? Every day.
Most easy runs.
Most easy runs, Bristol.
Yeah, one out of three.
Oh, really?
Yes! Okay. Right, Rick.
Okay, so I was going to go new runner, Bath. Ooh. Experienced runner, Bristol. And easy runner, I've got Southampton.
Oh, hello. Right. Okay. So between the two of you, you've got two out of the three.
Yay!
So I definitely wouldn't go Bath for new runners. It's very hilly, isn't it? So, but
yeah, Rick, obviously.
So actually there are four on the list. So, but these sound like the same things to me, really. So the best city for experienced runners is actually Gloucester, but the city with the highest number of challenging runs is Edinburgh.
That's what I said.
Yeah, yeah. So that one was Sarah. Nailed it. And then the city with the most easy routes. So 54 out of Southampton's 175
yes.
running routes are listed as
That's
easy.
Unbelievable.
That is actually incredible. So then the best city for new runners, and I've run here a lot because I spent my whole university life there, is Cambridge.
Interesting.
Really?
Because it's flat. Because it's in an area which is very flat and huge variety of paths and running routes. And
very cobbled in the city centre, though. Is one
I don't think they're talking about running
in
the city centre.
Oh, so Cambridgeshire.
Well, no,
flat, Cambridgeshire.
The city centre is tiny, so I think once you can only run a K in the middle.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah, once you're out on the rivers, the towpaths, there's a lot of nice paved as well as off-road stuff. I actually found it a bit boring when I was at university because there was very little variety because it is so flat and we had to kind of really make a pilgrimage to run hills. But there you go. Little quiz for us, Sarah. What have you got?
I enjoyed that. I want to talk about the World Athletics Road Championships that has just happened. So this is the inaugural event that has just happened in Riga and it looked amazing. Mm. I'm very excited to see what happens with this event year on year.
Yeah, I wish I'd been able to do this. I loved running on the road. I actually found I had like a really good record in road races. And I think possibly it's quite a different mental approach. Like you run a road, they had a mile, 5K, 10K and half marathon, I think.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Did you ever race in Riga?
No, I didn't. I'd love to go though.
Yeah, it looked beautiful.
Yeah, it looked spectacular.
Also a special shout out mention to, you recently did a bit of a, was it on YouTube as well?
It was, if you want to check it out. This amazing guy, The Distance Project is his YouTube channel, Callum Elson. He is an aspiring elite, he was until this year, but then all of a sudden he's run 335 1500 meters. He's gone out to this World Road Championships, I think, for his first GB vest, and come away with a silver medal in the road mile.
Absolutely incredible. He ran 356.41.
Congrats to him. Yeah,
so well done.
Yeah, and it was a really cool race to watch, and the road mile is difficult. I actually texted him beforehand, see how he's going out there, wish him luck and stuff. So hopefully he's been able to soak it all up and really enjoy it, and that those championships can now establish themselves in the calendar and become an extra thing that we can all get excited about.
Yes, definitely. Right, well, it's now time for your questions.
So, Ali from Oxford asks, is there a way to factor in random but inevitable breaks to a training plan? What about the mental side? I struggle with motivation in hard sessions when I'm partially expecting to not finish plans anyway. What about the mental side of returning to running after having time off? So she's probably had a little bit of a break, didn't mean to, wants to get back into it, but struggles.
Yeah, and a little bit of extra context that we had from Ali with this question was that she struggles with chronic illness. So obviously a very specific case, but I think the idea of the motivation of returning to training after a break that may or may not have been planned is like quite a good one to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I wanted to suggest is that if there's obviously the training element of you can expect breaks in your training, but then one thing that I'm sure you must be feeling, Ali, is just the nerves of like, as if you're training for a specific race and as that approaches, like, is that going to be when you're unable to run or train or do stuff? So one suggestion I would have is potentially put in like two or three different race options that are a few weeks apart, so that if you do have a break that ends up being quite close to the race and you just don't feel able to run, you've still got that kind of backup option, like kind of creating those like A, B, C goals. But okay, A race is here. If I take a break here, I can pick back up with training and then do this one, just so that you're not, you know, I know how it feels if you gear up towards a big race and then suddenly for whatever reason you're ill or injured and it just feels like, I don't know, it feels like you've wasted like 8 weeks of training, but absolutely shouldn't feel like that.
Trying to allay any guilt that you might feel from setting about something and then having to take a break from it and just not beating yourself up about it. Running is supposed to be fun. Like you're doing something to kind of maybe to improve and to get better and to work towards a goal. But also it should be fun to do that. So if you can just factor that in and go easy on yourself, not worry so much, then like that anxiety is always going to be the thing that plays into making things more of a struggle.
Mm.
So perhaps like if you can alleviate that anxiety by just like, you know, rolling with the punches, I suppose.
I'd take someone out with you as well to get back into it. So double up. If you're struggling to get back into it, then you've got the pressure.
Yeah.
You've got the immediacy of, you know, getting straight back out. And then, you know, you're forced to go out then so you can kickstart your training plan again.
As well, if you do have these kind of regular breaks in training, it might be worth speaking to a coach or a physio to work out like what is the best way that you can return back into running if that is happening a lot. Like I remember when I used, if I was ill, it would, no matter what was happening, my coach would always be like, right, 30 minutes, go see how you feel. And then that would then be what we base the next week of training on. So is there some kind of back to running plan that you always can do? And then it won't be that scary, like, oh, I've got to jump back in here. It's like, nope, okay, back in, 30 minutes, off we go.
Yeah, not everyone has access to them, but if you can seek someone out, whether that's a coach or an actual genuine sports psychologist, even just one session could make a massive difference, because what they can help you to do is reframe your approach to it every time it happens. So like whether that's to just acknowledge it, be mindful of your emotions about it, and then just to move on, or whether you actually have coping strategies, which is you write stuff down, or you just approach it in a different way every time that you're coming back to running, and then you're given the tools that you need to approach the mental side of it, basically.
Yeah, really good advice. So before we go, Andy, just remind people to share the podcast, if they can, in their WhatsApp groups.
Yes, we love running, and we hope you can get the same out. Hang on, what's he done here?
You get the same amount of enjoyment out of running as us, so please do share the Running Channel podcast with all of your running friends out there.
Oh, it's easy. Oh, it's so much fun.
Have you just pressed the button again?
Yeah, I have, yeah.
Okay, well, that's a good way to finish.
Thank you so much again for tuning in to the podcast, listening to Andy the Monster. Next week, should we have Andy the Duck?
Yeah, the duckling. Let's see what happens.
Goodbye.
Bye.
This episode was brought to you by Under Armour and their Infinite Elite Everyday Running Shoe, which has a focus on both comfort and endurance. So an ultra springy, responsive feel that protects your legs and keeps them feeling fresh, which is what Jess has been putting to the test as she's been training for over the last 12 weeks for taking on her ultimate ever 10K. And she's been focused on consistency. So being able to show up with those fresh legs every day and every week in order to put in the work and the recovery that she needs to do to run her best.
If you want to check out the Under Armour Infinite Elite, head to the link in the show notes.